Welcome to Kayak Fishing the Wild West. On your first stop for kayak fishing information, kayakfishingradio.com. I'm your host, Dennis Spike, joined by Northwest kayak fishing expert and co-host Isaac the Nothing Miller at the helm in Portland, Oregon. I'm broadcasting from the kayakfishingradio.com studio in Bodega Bay, California. And what news have we got for you? All kinds of things going on. Isaac, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Who was that intro? It sounded like Dick Dale.
That was actually a Brazilian surf band called The Dead Rocks.
Very cool. It got me excited.
I thought you might like that.
But it doesn't take much. How's the weather in Portland, Oregon?
Sunny and cold. Just the way
We've
I
been
like
having
it.
Wind events south of you.
That's what I've been hearing.
The wind's been blowing. And it's funny, me in the north and my family in the south have all been pretty much shielded, but everybody around us is suffering downed trees, power outages, fences blown down, and all kinds of problems. But there's that's where high pressure meets low coming north and south. And it's really dissipating as we speak, and we've got a good, clear, maybe cool, but a clear week ahead of us. Not much surf in the ocean, and right off the bat for the show, I wanted, you know, there's just so many things when we talk about the fishery and what's going on. It's negative, negative, negative. This is the first year that I can remember in quite a few years that rockfish and the lingcod cabazon series is open through the end of the year and the end of the month. In recent years, by this time, we were done fishing and it was crab only. And we don't have much surf in the water. It's 4 or 5 foot at best. So we're going to get out this Sunday and in the next week and get some fishing days in. I'm real excited about that. Especially this late in the season, this late in the fall, approaching winter, we get some pretty good spawns going on.
That is awesome. I'm pretty jealous of your
ability to fish.
Surf. Well, that too. That surf, just the surf report. You know, it's looking real good for us next week too. It's actually looking pretty phenomenal next week. So I might have to see if I can sneak out there myself. You know, we're looking, everything's under 4 feet starting Monday. And staying that way all the way through Friday. I mean, we got some days where they're talking 1.5 to 2 feet.
The Eastern Pacific can deliver some real weather surprises and what we normally refer to as the dead of winter. I remember even in Southern California back in the day before when we were just fishing like gentlemen, we'd get into some winter bites, and year-round we'd mark our big fish on a wall. And after several years, this is probably the early 80s, we started looking at some of those dates in November, December, January, February, March, when some years you can't even look at the water during those months. We had some great catches, halibut, white sea bass, even yellowtail in November in Southern California. So, no, we get most years, I find we get during the winter months windows of opportunity where we can get out, especially when there aren't any big storms up in the northern Pacific coming out of Alaska.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, I love winter, you know, when it lays down like this. It's great. You know,
it's some of the best fishing season, I think.
It is.
You know, it's funny, when I guide in the summer and I send out an equipment list, I tell people to bring a wool cap, excuse me, and they're thinking, summertime, you know, I'm going to be out there in a T-shirt or no shirt. But I tell you, there can be fog on the Pacific, and when that wind comes up at 11 in the morning, that breeze comes up with the fog, it can get right chilly out there. Right. Isaac, there's some exciting stuff in the fishery news. What's going on?
There is. You know, there's legislation was introduced here, but just this week, as far as I am aware, called the Fisheries Science Improvement Act. And this is what anglers have been asking for forever. The idea is that it's going to make the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, it requires them to actually take a look at the fish, at the fishery, before they start making any restrictions on the
I think
fishery.
What it boils down to is making management decisions based on science-based information.
Exactly. Hey, I'm going to jump in here real quick. We've got Mr. Jim Dolan in on the chat room right now. You can
ideal
see the chat
timing.
Room. That's Double Dip. That's Jim Dolan, Heroes on the Water. Good to see you here. And for anyone that's listening in and everyone in the chat room, feel free to give us a call tonight. Our call-in phone number is area code 714-816-4727. Doesn't matter if you're on the West Coast, the East Coast, or anywhere in between, or well outside of it. Give us a call. We can get you on the air and talk about kayak fishing.
We welcome all your questions and comments about the sport from wherever you are, and we want to talk to you.
But going back to that marine fish management, the Fishery Science Improvement Act is what they're calling it. I urge everyone to take action on this one. Go to keepamericafishing.org. They've got a big thing right there on the front of the page talking all about the Fishery Science Improvement Act. And there's a link down at the bottom on how you can help sending messages to the members of Congress. I mean, that is the thing. Getting, you know, showing them that you support this, and hopefully they'll do their job as a representative and represent the anglers and support this also.
I just want to interject a little bit Isaac, that nationwide we have lots and lots of lobbying organizations that are representing our interests in the fisheries. And Keep America Fishing, which is part of the American Sport Fishing Association, has done what I consider the most cohesive job of bringing the issues, the top issues, into the forefront and enabling anglers, us, to be able to act in our regions by taking advantage of this new electronic era, and it's just fantastic. And this legislation came about through angler action. Go ahead, Isaac.
Yeah, you know, for people that aren't familiar with Keep America Fishing, like I said, check them out for sure.
Log on
they
for
are,
the first time.
Yeah.
Definitely log on to this for the first time and immediately find out where the link is to get on their mailing list. And you'll get email notifications and alerts and newsletters and really, really good, pertinent information. And besides being great information, it's everybody's responsibility. And KeepAmericaFishing.org has really brought that together for us. It's an exciting lobbying group. And they've been around for a long time. It's really just a new name on a very strong, long-time lobbying effort.
That's very true. You know, that's the thing to remember is, you know, KeepAmericaFishing.org was really announced last summer at ICAST. That was a 2010 ICAST as opposed to this one. And it is just the American Sports Fishing Association. And
not just, that's a big thing, the ASA.
That's true, yeah. You know, started with the ASA. They're the ones that were really behind it. And they've pulled in members from throughout the fishing community, throughout the country. They've got some great partnerships for Keep America Fishing. You know, it's just great.
So tell
you
us
know,
more
the way
about
I
this legislation. Where are we at now? We have to go to the website, keepamericafishing.org, and right there on the page, they're going to give you, I believe, an action alert that you click on. You punch in your zip code, and it sends it to all the right legislators and states our opinion. And voices count.
Right. You know, they've got a real great setup. Type in your zip code, like you mentioned, hit submit, and it's going to pull up all your representatives, all your senators.
Your legislators,
and a
right.
form letter right there. You fill in your name, your address, and hit send. It's got all the information there. It's filled out for you, and they make it really easy to step in and speak your voice.
Having a proactive lobby is long overdue in the sport fishing arena.
It is.
And I'm really proud of Keep America Fishing. They're doing a great job, and support them with the full weight of everything that we do. And great information, too. I mean, there's stuff going on. I've been obliged to follow fishery issues, and I remember the early days, you know, the fishery issues initially for a lot of areas, especially along the eastern seaboard, meant access. Private beaches and communities, when they couldn't keep people off the beach, you know, outsiders, if you will, were making parking ordinances, so you just couldn't park within 10 miles of access to a beach. And it was the canoes and the kayaks of North America that really brought, in my experience and my observation, brought these access issues to life. But now it's a much bigger thing, and I believe that Marine Life Protection Act and other reckless causes among the fisheries is a big part of what brought this together, this new legislation. And in fact, it's not just the anglers. I believe that the scientists concerned about the fisheries are really behind this legislation and help move it forward. That's accurate, isn't it, Isaac?
I honestly believe so, yes.
I'm pretty sure about that.
You've been fishing for a long time, as have I. There's a lot of biologists that are out all the time, and they've got some great information. They know a lot of things about the fishery, but unfortunately, their knowledge is not shared with NOAA, and it's not being used to create these various, marine protection areas and things like that. So it's a very important.
I think it boils down to create sustainable fisheries that please everybody.
Exactly.
Except the unpleasable, of course.
All right.
KeepAmericaFishing.org. It really is greatness. You know, the first fishery lobbying group that I got active with was United Anglers of Southern California. Actually, two groups, also the Sport Fishing Association of California. And I was really lucky back in the mid-90s when I started writing on kayak fishing. I got hooked up with some sage managers, I'll call them. You know, they were commercial fishermen, recreational fishermen, industry guys, concerned anglers, and a lot of writers, guys like Bill Beebe. I don't know if these are names you've heard of because they're mostly Southern California-based, but a lot of guys who had columns for decades running in the sport fishing periodicals and stuff, and they're just sage contributors to the fishery, and now where are a handful of these great minds? They're up there lobbying for our sustainable fisheries, you know, in their last years of life. I mean, it really is an impressive effort. And seeing it come around, I can't tell you how fulfilling that is, because this is really something that we need. The whole, I rant and rave about it quite a bit, the whole extreme environmentalist movement, how it's loopholed the political process and in fact legal processes to create things that superficially look like really good things, like Marine Life Protection Act, that if you just scratch the surface, you find out not only are they bad for anglers, but they're not doing any good for the fisheries either.
So, right.
What is this price of sable fish holding, that black cod? Is it still triple what it was a few months ago?
Oh, you know what? I haven't even looked.
You're not even looking? Yeah,
I haven't even looked.
What was the hot sell of the week? I guess Dungeness crab's pretty hot right now, huh?
Well, you know, as you're aware, the Dungeness crab commercial fishery is on hold right now.
Oh, it opened up down here.
Oh, it did. Okay.
Yeah.
It is on hold in Oregon and Washington.
Wow. That's late, isn't it, Isaac?
It is. It normally starts up on the first of the month, but, you know, a couple weeks ago, fisheries managers went out, they pulled some pots, and they thought the crab was still kind of soft. So they
still
put it on hold.
Still light in volume.
Yeah, so there you go.
It turned
on hold for another 2 weeks. But I'll tell you, crabbing in the bays is still phenomenal.
And recreational crabbing's wide open, right?
Recreational is open, yes.
Yeah. We've had our season open for going on 3 weeks now. It's just about three and a half weeks now, the recreational season. And the commercial season, it seems traditional around here that when the processors set their price, the fishermen go on strike past opening day to get a better price. And the initial offerings weren't good. A handful of fishermen went north and south to different regions. And at the last minute, they settled at $2.25 a pound for the fishermen, which is not a great price, but everybody out there pulling pots is going to make money this season. And a lot of people ignored the it's like a quasi-embargo that people don't go out and fish. But, you know, you got a lot of out-of-state anglers here with paying for permits, and they were willing to fish for a couple of bucks a pound. So they got the jump on some of them. But it opened up. They came to agreement at the beginning of last week, and all the boats flowed out of the harbors, and they are out there fishing hard. Which brings me to another point, if I can just keep on going here, Isaac. I've been reading more and more kayak fishing forums, and most people I talk to, which in 16 years have been thousands of anglers, generally assume, because I publish kayakfishing.com, that I read every post on every website in every region in the United States. And the fact is, because of kayakfishing.com, I have rarely been afforded the opportunity to surf other sites. And now, because of business and things that are happening in the fisheries around the country and the world, writing opportunities, I'm looking at a lot of forums. And I saw mentioned today, now that the commercial crabbing season started, how the private boaters are talking about, now that the commercial season has started and those guys are out there pulling their pots, that generally we'll have 2 to 3 weeks of good crabbing, but then it's going to drop off for both recreational and commercial fishermen. And I got to tell you, for the few years that I've been fishing Dungeness crab, and the people I'm fishing with who've been fishing Dungeness crab all their life on small craft close to shore, the commercial fishery has nothing to do with it. It doesn't impact us at all. And we keep catching our limits as long as we're willing to put our gear in the water. And so that is one thing I want to dispel, because a lot of stuff you read, you know, the internet, I mean, it used to be when you read a book, for the most part, you considered it gospel. But I think that people have that same feeling with what they read, well-intended posts on kayak fishing forums. And there has been one issue that goes back and forth since the beginning of forums, and that is the use of waders on a kayak, especially for ocean fishing. And I think, simply stated, personally, I'm not a fan of waders. I've talked to too many individuals in different situations, kayaks and otherwise, that have had bad situations in water because they were wearing waders. But I think, generally, between intelligent anglers discussing the topic of whether waders are okay or not okay, that when it comes to safety, making error on the side of caution is always the best choice.
Right.
And when I see professionals out there taking a position that is pro waders on a kayak, especially for ocean fishing, it makes me wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my two big beefs for the day.
All right. So,
what do you think of waders there, Isaac? I know you use them fishing the rivers.
I
what
do
you think about putting waders on a kayak?
all the time, even in the summer. I've always got
them. You wear them. You wear waders.
Always. I do. Waders and dry top are my thing. You know, I went originally with dry pants that interlock into the dry top. And
that's a nice set of apparel there.
Yeah, the Tempest pants. And I enjoyed them. I thought they were great until I took my first bill in the surf zone.
Right. No, I didn't know you were talking about Tempest pants. I thought you were talking about a pant that tied into your top.
Not directly. No.
Like a suit. Yeah.
I've had
those same concerns, and I wear Tempest pants all the time with booties.
And, you know, because I wear, you know, with the dry top, I kind of wore the Tempest pants kind of, interlocked in between each layer, because there's the layer that goes inside the tunnel and then the layer on the outside. So,
but you took a dunk, but you took on some water there, huh?
I did. Not a whole lot, but I did take on some water, no more than a pint of water.
Right. How much swimming did you do?
Oh, I was in the water for quite a bit. I was in the surf zone. I flipped the kayak back over, pushed it towards shore, and, you know, walked
getting
my
hit
way
by
out.
A few rollers?
I did.
I got to tell you, this is a positive testimony from my point of view.
You know, and they did very well. Like I said, there was about a pint of water when all was said and done.
Well, I can do that with a hole in the bottom.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Just soaking my feet.
Never got cold, and that's, you know, totally because of wool and polypropylene fleece. Dried off pretty quickly. But have since semi-retired the Tempest pants. I still use those for flat water, for freshwater fishing. But I actually feel a lot better with waders underneath my dry top for the saltwater.
So, have you taken a good dunk in them?
I have, and I stayed dry.
And they hold up well.
They held up.
Is that a neoprene wader tight to the body?
No, they are breathable waders. Hey, we've got a guest on the line here. We'll rejoin this wader talk for sure. And who do we have? 757 area code.
What's going on, fellas? It's the landing crew.
Hey, how's it going?
Wheeler.
What's going on?
Well, thanks for coming on board on Friday.
I haven't done it yet, and I'm sitting here going, you know what? I haven't talked to those guys, and I haven't talked to this guy Dennis Spike, who just cannot, you know, seem to talk whenever he comes on my show. It's like pulling teeth.
It's kind of hard to get me to open up, isn't it?
Oh yeah. I mean, if I had you and Hoover on at the same time, forget it. I mean, it would
you
be
almost
one
got
of the
a 2-hour show out of that combination.
I did 2 episodes with Hoover, man, and he still has stuff to talk about.
What's going on, Mark?
Not much, man. Not much at all. Brewing a hot cup of coffee and watching the wind.
You know, I was looking at my list of gear, stuff I put on my boat, and I found a pair of Shimano pliers that have been floating around my gear maybe 3-4 years. I don't know how it got there, but they were locked from salt water, and I finally got them pried open. And I started looking at all the little peculiar things that I put on my boat. You guys, either of you guys use sponges on your boats?
I keep one inside my boat, but otherwise, no.
I use those ShamWows. The only thing they're good for is sticking. When I had my old ride where I had to use scupper plugs, otherwise I'd be soaking wet my whole time. I stick them in the footwell at the very end.
So
any one of those splash
the water
would soak up the water, and I just wring it out and replace them. They're small. They're, you know, inconspicuous, especially in the summertime when you just want a quick, you know, splash in your head, or when they're wet, just drape over top of your head, and they keep you cool.
I like,
you know,
the sponge
like
on my deck for just those reasons, keeping my head cool and keeping my deck clean. And about, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, I got turned on to using a sea sponge, which can be a very expensive thing, but if you shop it around, can be a very reasonable thing. They hold up for a long time. They do a good job on the deck. I love sea sponges. So I'm down in Southern California last week. The girlfriend and the mom are out shopping, and they see a little kiosk at the Los Angeles Farmers Market, which isn't really a farmers market. It's just a little tourist section down there by CBS Studios. And there's a little kiosk stand selling sea sponges. And they picked me up a new sponge that is the size and shape of a fez. And I used it last week while I was down there. This is one awesome sponge. I think it's going to split. What I do when I get like four or five or six smaller sea sponges, I put them in, you know, those mesh bags that fruit comes in?
Yeah.
I put them in there, and I'll put four, five, six little sponges together and use that as my sponge on my deck. So it has a little scrubbing power, and it gives you big sponge absorption with little sponges, because big sea sponges are expensive. But all the cellulose sponges, all the automotive sponges, synthetic sponges that I've bought, nothing works better than a natural sea sponge. Okay, you can check that one off my list, boys.
Can you just do that to keep your deck clean?
Am I killing you here?
No. You know, I use sponges for a while, but to have the ability to take something and fold it up, keep it, you know, nice and small. I lost so many sponges over the side, you know. But the moment that thing starts to get wet, it gets heavy and sticks to the bottom. It doesn't float either.
Good point.
With that ShamWow. And plus, like I said, man, it gets hot out here. You know, like when I was in Florida, it was killer at one point. But I took the thing, you know, unfold it, wrung it out a little bit so I still had some moisture on it, dropped it over top of my head, and, you know.
Oh, that makes a big
difference.
Something
like that where we had some extra evaporation, you know. It went from, you know, couldn't handle the heat to, all right, I can bear it now. You know, and that little, you know, 5, 10 minutes of comfort. Can, you know, especially when I'm bass fishing, man. I'm out here,
you know,
on the lake.
That's hydrating,
on the lake,
too. And it's funny, when all those camel pack bags started coming out, I just said to myself, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. You drink out of a bottle of water. But the truth is, I mean, between kayak fishing and cycling and running and walking and literally every physical opportunity, you know, it's pretty much just a tool for hydration. And I see a lot of guys on the water using camel packs, too.
Yeah, I hooked mine up behind me because I have the old ride, that high seat. I could take it, remove the seat completely, lay it down so it's trapped in, put the seat back down on top of the seat post, and now I have constant hydration right behind me, you
nice.
Know, at an arm's length, you know.
You know, I love
like
the
that.
Old ride. And I only
yeah.
say that because I don't have any experience with the new one. But the old ride with that double hull was, you could do anything with that boat.
Yeah. Yeah, just don't ever pearl the nose in a big wave.
No, it is a pearler. It is a pearler. You know, it's funny because we're talking about this, and I talk to so many people in the sport. Surf is not a consideration for most people. Plain and simple.
That should be the number one thing if you're just starting off and trying to learn is, you know, learn dealing with surf and, you know, surf launches and landings. You know, it took me over a year and a half in San Diego just to even get proficient at surf landing. I don't know how much gear I lost, man, going, you know, head over teacup or
you
coming
know,
in sideways and, you know, flop, 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 flop in the waves, you know.
I believe the sport, the modern era of the sport, was born in the surf zone around the United States. And my cousin Howie, my fishing partner, and I joke to this day about that one room down in Davy Jones' locker where he's put all of our stuff. And just the sunglass department alone is in the thousands.
Yeah.
You know. Howie directs TV commercials. He wears fancy sunglasses. But, yeah, I mean, the stuff we have dropped to the bottom of the sea. But, again, that, you know, all of that is what got me from being an acupuncturist to being a kayak fishing guide. You know, I figured I couldn't handle the pressure of having to put people on fish every day, but I could certainly teach them how not to ruin and lose their gear while doing it.
Right.
And heck, I made a whole video out of that. Hey, I got a solemn note I need to touch on, you guys. I don't know if you heard this terrible news out of Melbourne, Australia. About 5 days ago, two guys, a 36-year-old and a 40-year-old, couple of plasterers. They were buddies through work. They went to a kayak shop and they bought a couple of motorized fishing kayaks. And in their excitement to get out, 2 days after purchasing them, they met at the beach. They motored out offshore when nobody else did. And I've read a lot of every newspaper article that's been published about this. The guys were admittedly by their friends and family totally inexperienced, not just in kayaks, but with the ocean. They had very little seamanship experience, little to none, you know, beyond going fishing. And they were lost. The squall came in, cold front. One guy said, you know, some days there would have been 200 boats on the water in that area, but there were no boats. And both kayaks washed up on the beach, both anglers. One was found on the beach, the other was found in the water, both wearing life jackets.
Oh, crap. So they were wearing PFDs.
Well, they were indeed wearing life jackets. And it has been on my mind for days since it happened. The fact that, A, it is such a tragedy, but it gets me back to thinking of all those entry-level schools that I've guided the last 15 years where people have come who have had their kayaks for a couple of years who don't even know how to get back on it if they fall off. And as I was getting, this all comes full circle with me. It sounds like one big ramble, but as I've been had the opportunity lately to peruse a lot of forums and a lot of different websites, I came to a thread, and I don't even know where the guy was, but he's a kayak fisherman, and he came off of his boat, and he could not get on it. And within 5 minutes, there was another boat in the area that rescued him. And I really give the guy kudos for sharing his experience so candidly, but it just, you know, I don't want to use words like not thinking.
that's what it comes down to is, and I think that's where, you know, the use of websites, you know, that are coming around to it more, you know, with the forums and everything else, you know, that's where we get people asking in the very beginning, what kayak should I buy?
I think
a
lot of people.
The next question should be, or the next thing we should say, you know, next to, you know, giving kayak suggestions is how to properly get acclimated to the sport. And when I tell people when they first buy them, get in a damn kayak when you're out and you test them. Paddle out, get a feeling for it, and then really get it going and then tip it. You know, because I don't understand these guys, never been in kayak fishing before, but they'll go out and buy a Hobie Pro Angler. You know, I have a trouble, and I'm a big dude. I have a lot of trouble flipping a pro angler around after I dump one.
Getting it right.
You lock the compass to get it right.
Now, the pro
right
angler, is that, and pardon me for not being as familiar as I should be, is that an Outback version?
No,
that's a
complete, that's
a whole different animal.
The pro angler is a completely different haul than the Adventure and all those other models.
The pro angler is, if you go to the Hobie Cat website,
yeah,
the
I'll
pro
take a
angler
look at it after
is
the, show.
The pro angler is listed not as a kayak but as a boat because it is a boat. It's 110 pounds. It's fully loaded.
I know which boat you're talking about. That's the one that has the apron and all that.
Right.
I know exactly.
That's
a personal watercraft. That's not a kayak.
Yeah. They list it as a boat, not as a kayak. Try to point
that out. And I'd imagine that would be a bear to get that thing righted. Probably help to have a mast on it.
Yeah.
Well, what actually helped me was the anchor trolley. is I had to do a little Shamu action, get myself onto the belly of this kayak, reach around, and I grabbed the anchor trolley line, brought my feet up to the other side, and did a old pontoon flip that I learned how to do in the Marine Corps when we had the pontoon boats, and flip it over like that. And that took a hell of an amount of energy.
Was that an exercise you were going through to learn your boat?
That was an exercise I was doing to show someone who really shouldn't own a kayak like that, why not to buy that kayak. And that's because this was a little woman who was maybe 100 pounds and wanted to do sea tours with this thing.
Huh.
No. No. And
yeah, you
got to
do. You got to be able to manage your craft. That's for sure.
Yeah. So I showed her, a Tarpon 140, and she was like, "Oh, I like that. It's speedy and everything else." And I was like, "Yep. Now watch what I flip it." And I flipped it, just reached up with one hand, whoop, and we're right back over again. And I got right into it. And I was like, "See, you can do that too." And she did it two or three times before I even, let her go to the next boat she wanted to look at.
Nice.
So,
nice.
That's
good experience right there. It's funny. I was talking to a guy via email, and I told him, we're down there crabbing. I said, run down to the beach and I'll give you my 20 minutes. This is how you get familiar with a kayak. And it's funny, it's in the kayak fishing video. Whenever I take somebody out for the first time, I have them put their paddle down, rock the boat left and right, then turn and put their feet completely in the water, 90 degrees, then rock the boat in that position, then slide up and down the deck. I mean, the natives had wash deck kayaks, and they were moving villages with them. What I was saying about a lot of these people who come to do the instructional school and have had their kayaks for a couple of years and have never done a wet rescue on their own, a lot of them have never gotten out of the forward position. They're stuffed in a traditional kayak for years. So it just blows me away. But, it brings it full circle when – and what made me bring all these little topics about waders and my sponge, and I didn't mention bilge pumps and these guys passing in Australia, is that one day, so many of us fish for so many years and never get into bad conditions. I consider myself lucky to have had those experiences where literally a squall, or they call it in Spanish a chubasco or a tormenta, when the weather turns. And this incident, we were talking about sharks because of a hit that occurred down in Pigeon Point a couple weeks ago, a week and a half ago. And there was a shark attack when... Back in the 80s, there was a report, I should say, of a shark attack. What happened was Pepperdine University is in Malibu, right there on the beach on Pacific Coast Highway. And a couple of university students took their kayaks out for a recreational paddle in the afternoon. One of them was in one of the old scuppers. I don't know what the other boat was. And the boats were found tethered together. The guy who was over 100 pounds was never recovered. The girl who was 92 pounds or something like that, her torso was recovered without a head or any limbs. And
wow.
When I started getting serious about kayak fishing was right around the time that these two disappeared at sea. And it was reported as a shark attack. It was reported as a drowning. And I saw a documentary television show several years back, not too many years back, that was a half hour dedicated to the white shark attack on these two individuals. Now, when I got serious about being in the water a lot on my kayak in Malibu, right where this had happened, I researched that event. And I couldn't get anybody official to tell me that it was a white shark attack. And what I believe and what they believed was that the conditions turned, and they turned like somebody flipped a switch. There were Santa Anas. There were confusing winds at sea. The conditions got bad, and they drowned. And I believe that that incident in Malibu with the two Pepperdine University students is the same conditions that took these two poor young guys in Australia, and that the fact that the Pepperdine thing, by the way, Ralph Collier, who runs the Shark Research Institute, swears up and down, as does Tim Niemeyer, that Pepperdine thing was a white shark attack. Okay, which brings me to another safety point. I believe that in bad conditions, towing another kayak to aid an angler is too high risk of being a kiss of death move.
Yep. Stay close.
Whole point about this, and thanks for letting me ramble on, you guys, my whole point about this is that all the years we get, all the experience we get, all we think that we know the ocean and how bad it can be and what it can do, it's that one day, like what happened to these two guys. They didn't. If they would have checked a report, they might have had better information and chosen not to go or to do something differently. But whether we have that report or not, it doesn't matter. Reports aren't reliable. And it can switch out there like in a matter of seconds to where you're fighting to stay on board and you're fighting to stay alive. So all this safety stuff we talk about and all the ranting I do, you know, this terrible situation in Australia, terrible occurrence, I should say, is just another reminder for us. The sport's pushing two decades now, the modern era of the sport, and we've had relatively few fatalities. But it's all Mother Nature, and we're never going to, you know, we can get proficient, but we can never get perfect. And I hope I got somebody's attention there.
You know, I think it's more, there have been incidents, I work as an EMT for a volunteer company, and, you know, we get calls all the time for kayakers, not necessarily fishing kayaks, but paddling around, sightseeing, you know, tourists, you know, falling in and getting in trouble. You know, we have to go out and save them. You know, so I think, you know, there have been incidents where, you know, it's kayakers, but they've never really said fishing kayakers. And now they're saying it's a fishing kayak and a fish and an angler on that boat that you know, it's more mainstream because more people fish, you know. You put in fishing kayak and, you know, I did it on Google today, fishing kayak, and whoop, popped up this report. You know, this news report, I was like, oh, man, you know. So it's getting more exposure.
No, it's definitely getting mainstream. This is a trend and not a fad, that's for sure. You know, one thing I wanted to mention, and I know it's early and I don't want to be disrespectful. These fatalities in Australia were motorized kayaks.
Mm-hmm.
And not, they were aftermarket. They were not kayaks that were made to be motorized. And you know, you got to think, when you put all that weight on the back of the boats that we use, and you get into confused seas, or seas that want to toss your kayak around, all that weight on the back, that battery on the deck, you know. And that's another thing. You know, do you guys fish much with live bait tanks?
No.
I don't use one up north.
Nope.
Of course, you don't have much of a live bait fishery. What about on the eastern seaboard, Mark?
I do, because I still have my San Diego ways. You know, when I'm talking bunker and, you know, using, you know, live minnows and stuff like that, yeah, I
right.
keep a bait tank back there.
South of you, people using shrimp and Manhattan and pilchards. So there is a section of kayak fishermen who uses live wells on the kayak, whether they're built in or portable, but you know, this is just another safety factor to have in your head. And as I mess around with bait tanks on kayaks, I'm thinking of a quick pump out and a bait tank that seals completely in bad seas. Am I making any sense with this?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Get rid of that.
Yeah. I don't want a bait bucket on there or a tank that's going to become a liability. And again, if you have a bait tank on your boat, going into the bourgeois of making my kayak like a classic automobile, why can't we hook up our bilge pumps to drain our boat in an emergency?
I put them on Commanders.
Oh, I like that, Doc.
Right underneath the seat of a Commander is a foam piece.
Uh-huh.
Underneath that captain's perch.
What is that, a bulkhead or a spacer?
It's more like a spacer.
Yeah, interesting.
And it's actually the lowest point on the whole Commander. When you drain water, it goes right there. So what I've done is I took I think it's a 500-gallon a minute bilge pump, quickly wired it to a floating...
Right, afloat.
A bilge
switch. Float.
And it runs off of, I think it's like 6 AA batteries.
Oh, really?
And it velcros to the bottom of the captain's perch. So now, if I went ahead and I filled the dang thing up, flipped on the switch within 20 seconds, it was pretty much like 85% dry.
You're doing some great research there. And is that the purpose of your bilge pump in the boat? Is as a bilge pump? It's not that's not like a second assist after your bait tank.
No. And actually, my
Very
bait
cool.
tank has a modified bilge pump inside of it. So that way I can
tell you, our pro staffer Tiny up here in San Francisco. Once we were talking about it. Once I mentioned that you did it, I bet you it's in his boat within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Now, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. I like the little power pack, too. But, I do like those little lead core batteries like they use for quads.
Right. But,
yeah, they
Dennis, I have to run.
No worries. Thanks for jumping on board.
Yep.
Not a problem.
Good to have you on the show.
Have a great weekend.
Yep, you too. Taiwan.
Adios. You won't hear any of that around here, Isaac.
Yeah. Going to be a while before that happens.
Yeah. Unless it's me screaming.
Nah.
I think we covered some good points tonight.
Absolutely.
We got a little good information out there. And, I was all into this solemn, safety, dark show. And then you came in with that great surf tune for the intro and picked me right up.
I will have it again on the outro, too.
I lost half of my screens here. I want to thank Mr. Wheeler for coming on board and the guests for tuning in to the chat room.
We had Jim Dolan from Hero on the Water on there.
Jim, thank you very much. Heroes on the Water. In fact, I was just looking at, I got to talk to Danglin here in the Bay Area. I think we need to have a Heroes Crab event. There was one postponed. I don't know if a reschedule got done there. Heroes on the Water, what a great way to get those guys and those veterans on the water doing a little crabbing.
Yeah.
We make them work too hard to get their fish. The crabbing makes it easy, and it's a fun day.
Right on. Yeah, he was saying that there was supposed to be a crab trip there in Bodega Bay, but weather canceled it.
Yeah, and it was on the weekend of a family fiesta I had in Southern California, actually the exact day. So with a little bit of selfishness, I was glad that it got postponed because now I'll be able to participate. They're fun events. If you come for the barbecue and to meet a few people, alone. Heroes on the Water is a wonderful group to support. Isaac, you want to take us out for the 2nd of December 2011?
Sure.
Find some banjos or something. I lost my screen altogether. Thanks again to everybody for tuning in, for listening to the archived show. later on in the week. Join us every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time, from wherever you're from. And let's talk kayak fishing on Kayak Fishing the Wild West with Spike and Isaac the Nothing Miller. Thanks, Isaac. I'll see you next week.